We always love when we are in a land with books, and especially when it's Woodstock, it gets even better. We are going to the front door of the Golden Notebook this morning to hear from Jackie Callahan to tell us what really cool books have been popping up on the shelves and are worth our precious literary time. Jackie, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. How are you? It's so nice to be here. And I have to say, if you were walking down Tinker Street in Woodstock to come to the door of our store, you would see on the side of our building the familiar face of Grace Slick, but she has a mask over her face.
Yeah.
And so our motto this summer is peace, love, and masks.
Yes, peace, love, masks. And it's You're welcoming people into the store still, right?
Absolutely. We are. Yeah, we've been open and we've been letting, you know, roughly about 10 people with masks into our store at a time. And we are talking about books and we're selling books and we're doing our book club virtually. And so we've been, engaged in books as much as we are, just in a different way. And there are so many incredible books, as you know, this summer. And the first one, actually, that I wanted to talk about just came out last week, and it's Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. And her previous book, The Warmth of Other Suns, many are familiar with. It was, it took her 15 years to write, received many accolades. It's about the Great Migration in the United States. This book looks to try and understand American hierarchy, and she defines two tiers, right? There's a dominant or white caste and a subordinate or non-white caste. And for Wilkerson, a racist is someone who harms, mocks, or institutionalizes inferiority on the basis of race. But a casteist is someone who upholds or benefits from an ingrained system of hierarchy, never challenging its assumptions. And it's through this lens that she's looking at American history and structural power in America. And she also compares this to kind of the two other best-known caste systems, one in India, which is very, very old, and one in Nazi Germany during the Holocaust. This book is really, really incredible. It's searing. It's a painful book to read as a white person. I think it's a very necessary book. She has, in my reading of it, I read certain sentences and, I kind of have to sit with them for a while, and I know I'm going to have to reread the book, I think a couple times, just in my own process as a white person, trying to grapple with our American history. So, for instance, there's a sentence like this where she's talking about the South and particularly life during previous to the Civil War. She says, "The most respected and beneficent of society people oversaw forced labor camps that were politely called plantations, concentrated with hundreds of unprotected prisoners whose crime was that they were born with dark skin." And, when I read that sentence, I certainly have said the word plantation, but calling it a forced labor camp, which is what it is, and that's probably even kind, is just sitting with that historical, the correct naming of that is very powerful. And so she talks about the American caste system, and like India or Germany, it was constructed and practiced openly, and it still is, and it doesn't hide its savagery. And she quotes Hitler, and he observed that it's really uniquely American to have a knack for maintaining an air of robust innocence in the wake of mass death. This is certainly a book to read with your family in book clubs. Try and find a virtual free book event that she's done, and she's been doing many on her virtual book tour, to hear her talk about it and to hear some of the powerful people that she's been in conversation with. I happened to catch a really great one, a conversation between her and Jackie Woodson last week. And it's a book I think that we'll all be reading, and I just so strongly recommend it.
It is really terrific. I'm about a quarter of the way through it, and it's really good and so important. It's Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents, and it's by Isabel Wilkerson.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and I just have to mention that this is our next book club pick, and we're fortunate to have a very large stock of the book in our store. So
great.
Just have to say that. The next book that I wanted to talk about is a book by Liz Lenz, and it's called Belabored, a Vindication of the Rights of Pregnant Women. And in this book, she you know, it's many times when one is pregnant, they might read a book like What to Expect When You're Expecting. And this is, in many ways, I would say, a book just like that, except it is kind of taking apart the reality of motherhood, you know, one that contrasts with what, like, our sort of, you know, white American creation myth about motherhood is versus what it's really like, you know? And, you know, there's this sort of myth of, like, motherhood as being, like, a kind of experience of purity and perfection for white women, you know, not for obese women, not for incarcerated women, not for brown women, Native women, queer women, or black women. And the reality of what pregnancies are like for those groups is different than white women. And so, you know, by debunking the myth of motherhood and sort of examining kind of the violence of the term mother, and she's sort of exploring the political space where a woman's body is fought over and to a certain extent is powerless to control and powerless against the sort of conversation around it that's been dictated by men, you know, one who make laws really regarding reproduction, whether it's abortion, family leave, whether it's outlawing midwives, and certainly medicalizing deliveries. And so it's a very, you know, if you're going to read a book about motherhood, and I'm certainly, you know, I'm fortunate to be a mom. I'm not one to read books about motherhood. I did read this one, and it's really, really good. So, Belabored.
Belabored, A Vindication for the Rights of Pregnant Women by Liz Lenz. All right, next up.
Next book is a wonderful, wonderful thin book, but not one you could read fast, by Zadie Smith, called Intimations. And these are short essays reflecting on life in a time of COVID-19. And they sort of vary in tone, and, you know, she's highlighting, like, kind of all the vulnerabilities, you know, personal, financial, societal, educational, health. And also, just to kind of link back to what we were saying about Isabel Wilkerson's book, she's exposing the bones of sort of the structure that creates inequity. And, you know, what do we do when our routines are stripped away? And if you're Zadie Smith, you know, you're writing, right? And these are snapshots to put her thoughts in order, and in a way to help put our thoughts in order. And it's really a remarkable book. I found the last essay in it particularly powerful, and she's talking about racism. And racism is the virus, and it's a virus that if you're a white person, well, you wouldn't say you have any symptoms of this disease, right?
Right.
It's only when you're, you know, in the park and you're doing and someone black invades your space, and then the virus comes out. And she talks about the herd immunity that our society, that our white society, thinks it has against racism, but it does not. And it's quite a searing essay. And she ends with this quote, and, you know, this is again kind of building on the metaphor of this terrible COVID you know, pandemic that we're experiencing, right, that's revealing all of these vulnerabilities. It circles back to what Isabel Wilkerson is saying as well. But Zadie Smith says, I used to think that there would one day be a vaccine, that if enough people named the virus, explained it, demonstrated how it operates, videoed its effects, protested it peacefully, revealed how widespread it really is, how the symptoms arise, how so many Americans keep giving it to each other irresponsibly and shamefully, generation after generation, causing intolerable and unending damage, both to individual bodies and to the body politic. I thought if that knowledge became as widespread as could possibly be managed or imagined, that we might finally reach some kind of herd immunity. I don't think so anymore. You know, the book doesn't end it ends in a somewhat hopeful note when she kind of talks about her own DNA of the people in her life. And these are just, again, one sentence musings, but it's so beautifully and powerfully done. Please get Intimations by Zadie Smith.
Such a important book and really incredible. I love her anyway. Just a wonderful author. Intimations by Zadie Smith. Okay, next up.
Okay. So the next two books I wanted to talk about, you know, often in the summertime, someone says, well, what were your favorite books this summer? And so I have two answers to that. And one is a book that I read in one night, and then the other one is a book that took me like a month to read. And they're both, you know, I'm very susceptible to, I would say, New York City site-specific fiction, because I miss the city that I was born in a lot. And so the two books I wanted to talk about are The City We Became by N.K. Jemisin and Deacon King Kong by James McBride.
Certainly,
N.K. Jemisin is probably one of the most important fantasy writers of her generation, and I would say right now. You know, her Broken Earth trilogy, which I believe it just started 10 years ago, is unbelievable. In this book, she is in a new space. She's in New York. I think if you're a New Yorker, like, you really love this book. I'm not sure if it works, in the same way if you're not. But, you know, the premise is that sort of all the world's great cities, when they reach a certain size, they're kind of born into an anthropomorphic form, and there's like a soul of the city, but it's embodied by real people. And that's what she's doing in this book. There's five boroughs, five people, and the city is under attack from this sort of like, it's kind of like a squid, but it also has other manifestations. And the five people that anthropomorphize the boroughs are terrific. They're amazing, and they kind of represent the genuineness, the history of New York from the indigenous perspective, and then also from the immigrant perspective of the different five folks. Staten Island being an exception to that. And the enemy is more the kind of the corporate personification of establishment and gentrification. It was like I blew through this book. It's so much fun to read. I can't wait for the next. It's going to be a three-book trilogy. Now, the next book, Deacon King Kong by James McBride, took me a while to read. It is so good. The book is not set in the future. It's set in 1969 at the Causeway Housing Projects in Brooklyn. And it is a book that is written with, I would say, great humor, great tenderness. There's moments of wonderful kind of comedy and cartoonish and slapstick humor. And the characters in the book have names like Sport Coat, Hetty, Hot Sausage, Sister Veronica Gee, the Elephant, and it sets up really the main character, Deacon Cuskey Lambkin of Five Ends Baptist Church, who's most commonly known as Sport Coat to his friends. He marches out into the plaza of the Causeway Housing Projects and has an ancient .38 Colt, and he shoots a 19-year-old drug dealer in the face, and the drug dealer's name is Deems Clement. And Deems had formerly been a kind of baseball protege of Sport Coat. And the narrative, in a way, is between these two poles. A lot of the older characters in the book were part of the Great Migration, and they came to New York, and they took over this housing. They occupied this housing project after some of the original Italian immigrants who the housing projects were built for moved out. And this is a moment in the city history where these projects are being allowed to decline, and there's exodus from the city, and this community mostly of black characters, but also Latino characters, are trying to preserve and succeed in a terribly changing world, and it's all sort of borne out between these two characters. And in a way, like when Sport Coat shoots his baseball protege, it's an act of, in order to try to preserve a dream of success, you have to kill it. But I'm not going to spoil how things turn out, and except to say that some of the folks that die are already dead at the beginning of the story. It's a wonderful, wonderful book.
It really is. James McBride, and the book is Deacon King Kong. I think we only have time for one more book, so your choice.
Well, good. So I'm going to talk about a music book. And so there's a really wonderful, fun book called Remain in Love, Talking Heads, Tom Tom Club, Tina, and it's by Chris France. And for those who may not be acquainted with Chris France, he's the drummer for the band Talking Heads, which was a band in the late 70s and 80s. Well known for all the band members being like mostly from the Rhode Island School of Design. They existed in the same moment of time as CBGB's, the Ramones, the B-52s, a lot of amazing bands. And this is Chris France's memoir, and it's written in a very casual, sort of breezy way. It's, you know, a bit dishy. It's a bit gossipy. There's like, I don't know, 56 chapters. There are 56 chapters, but they're mostly 3 or 4 pages long. So you can just pick up a chapter and read it. And, you know, for me anyway, the most fun parts were the kind of the origin story and also of the band when they first moved to New York City, and then also, of course, when they're touring with the Ramones and just hearing about, like, what the Ramones did when they were touring Europe.
We're out of time.
It's a wonderful, fun book.
All right. I'm sorry we're out of time, but we're out of time. you're the best. Thank you very much. Jackie Callahan is from the Golden Notebook in Woodstock, and we applaud the great work you do. You can go to their website. It's goldennotebook.com, goldennotebook.com. You can also see the book picks on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Jackie, you're the best. Thank you very much.